Okay, good evening, everybody. Shalom and welcome. Just want to let everybody know this is being live streamed, and we're recording it, so it'll be on YU Torah tomorrow as well. So if you can't get it now, it's on Facebook as we're speaking. If you don't want to look at me directly or look at any of our speakers, you can just look at your phone. And we won't assume you're texting, we'll assume you're actually watching the Divrei Torah being given right in front of you. It's really special to be hosting this event. It's a schus for Shomrei Torah, and really a schus for the entire Fairlawn community that we're having a night where we are united together, biyachad, physically, not only in theory, but all together, all of us together, sharing Divrei Torah for the special night of the Seder. I want to personally thank Avi Zanjurian. Avi is the president of the Young Israel Fairlawn, and he has been the coordinator behind the scenes. Emails, it's not so easy to get seven rabbis together on any night, and somehow it worked out even with a backup, because it was supposed to be one night and we switched it. So yashar koach to Avi. We got the food, you organized everything, really, we really, really tremendously appreciate it. The learning tonight is a refuah shlema for Sophie Spangenthal, Shavra Gabriela Bashani Eliza. Should have her in mind. She went through another round of chemo this morning. I'm not going to speak any longer. I'm just going to give you the schedule for the rest of the night. The goal is Maariv at the end. This is not Leha Seder. It's not Rabbi Akiva's B'nai Brak. We're not going to go until the morning. Even though many of us probably could, we're not going to. If you'd like to, maybe some of us will stay around to share other Divrei Torah afterwards. Just on your tables, there is an exam booklet. Don't get nervous, don't start sweating. It's not an exam booklet, it's for notes. Avi brought that with pens, you can take notes on that. There's also a sheet over here. On the back is Divrei Torah. I emailed all the rabbis asking if there are any Mar Mekomos. One of them was prepared in advance. I'm sure everybody was really prepared in advance, but Rabbi Bergstein was the only one who in this hectic time was able to put together a source sheet. Yashar koach to him. We're going to go in order of the Divrei Torah in the Seder to make it easier for everybody. So we're going to begin tonight. I have a list over here. We're going to begin tonight with Rabbi Newbort of Anche Lubavitch, speaking about Yachatz. Kavod Rav.
Thank you, Rabbi Markowitz. So I have a nice, sweet and short vort about Yachatz. Traditionally, we have three matzahs on the Seder, and there's somebody taking care of the Facebook Live there. My head is cut off. So
I was doing it based on my height.
Yeah, I understand. All right, that's better. Okay. I just caught the corner of my eye. It's difficult to see. Okay. So traditionally we have three matzahs on the Seder plate. And the top matzah represents the Kohen, the middle is the Levi, and the bottom is the Yisrael. And for the Yachatz, we take out the middle matzah, we break it in half, we take the larger piece, and we put it away for Afikomen. Now, why do we break the matzah? This is another element of Lechem Oini. It's another element of poor man's bread. On Shabbos and on Yom Tov, of course, we have Lechem Mishnah, we have whole loaves, we make sure that they're complete, like a rich person. But a poor person, the Shvarim are cheaper, the broken breads are cheaper. And so, although we don't want to deviate from this idea of having Shleimos, Lechem Mishnah, at the Seder, so we have three matzahs, the Kohen and the Yisrael remain whole, and we break the Levi matzah. And in this way, we're representing that we're going to eat broken matzah. The question is very simple. Why would we? We understand we have to keep two whole and we have to break one. But the question would be, why would we break the middle matzah, the Levi matzah? Shevet Levi, we all know, was not meshubad in Mitzrayim. They were there. They couldn't leave. But they were not enslaved. So to represent brokenness, one would think that it would be most appropriate to break the bottom matzah, the matzah representing the Yisroel. Because the Kohanim and Levi, the Kohanim come from Shevet Levi, of course, they were not enslaved. Now, in answer to this, there's a similar idea that we have when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, and it says that Yosef cried on the necks, plural, of Binyamin, and Binyamin cried on the neck of Yosef. And in Shir HaShirim, the neck is representative of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan. And Rashi brings down from Chazal that what Yosef was crying over was the Shnei Bote Mikdashes, the two Beis HaMikdash that were going to be destroyed in Binyamin's Chelek. And Binyamin was crying on Yosef's neck because of the Mishkan Shiloh, which would be no longer in Yosef's Chelek. And the question, the simple question is, why don't they each cry for their own disasters that are going to befall them? Why should I cry for you and you cry for me? Let's cry for ourselves. Yosef can cry for the Mishkan Shiloh, and Binyamin can cry for the Shnei Bote Mikdashim that will be destroyed in his territory. And the answer is very simple. When it comes to crying over tragedy, over difficulty, crying over difficulty is appropriate when it's for somebody else. Somebody else is a tragedy has befallen them, something, they're going through a difficult time. So crying for them, that's appropriate. That's all you can do. Something happened to them and that's it. This is what it is. Especially when it's going to be in the future. But when it comes to yourself, when it comes to your own problems, sitting and crying doesn't do anything for anybody. You have to pick yourself up by your bootstraps, as they say, dust yourself off and move forward. And when there's a gzera that's sitting on your head, you can't sit and cry. You have to do. And so therefore, Yosef cries for Binyamin, and Binyamin cries for Yosef, but they for themselves, for their own destinies, they have, the only thing they can do is action. In Mitzrayim, they were, all the Jewish people were destined to Golus in Mitzrayim, but only most of the Yidden, other than Shevet Levi, were enslaved. So when it comes to their hardship, so Shevet Levi can cry over the hardships of the Jewish people, of the rest of their brethren. But they themselves, it's not appropriate for them to cry over the shibud, over their enslavement. What they need to do is Hanitzak al Hashem, Alikei al Yiseichem. They need to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to end the galus, take it from Yad Mamash.
Many different customs that we have in the Manishtana, different homes. But most of the homes have usually a child or someone younger singing the Manishtana. And other families have that there's usually a Chazara from the Baal Agada. But I noticed something fascinating in the Rambam today. You look at the Rambam in Perek Ches, where he's laying out the Seder, the Leila Seder, the Seder of the Seder. The Rambam writes that we come up to the Manishtana, and the Rambam says you do a few different things, Vekana ben Shoal, like the Mishnah says, and you're expecting the Rambam to say, and this is where the child asks, Manishtana. And the Rambam doesn't say so. The Rambam says, Vekana ben Shoal, and then the Rambam says, Va'omer hakore, Manishtana alai lazeh. So it really bothered me. I don't understand.
If the Rambam wants to say that there are no children at the Seder, and therefore the Baal HaGadol is the one who's going to ask Manishtana, okay, so say the Baal HaGadol is going to say the Manishtana. But if the Rambam's telling us there is a Ben there, and the Ben is Shoel, so then you should mimic what the Mishnah says, that the Ben should be Shoel, the Manishtana. Why does the Rambam highlight and say, Vekan HaBen Shoel, and then he takes the microphone away from the Ben, and he says that, the Kori says, Manishtana Alaylaza. Who's speaking over him? Is it the child? Or is it the father? So I saw that some sefer and his Aharis and Shulchan Aruch already raises this issue on the Rambam. And it got me thinking. The Svar Makdoshim speak about the beginning of Magid, which starts with Manishtana. Halach Ma'anya was not always in the Magid. Manishtana is the beginning, it's already back in the Gemara. That was the way we were Yotzei with these questions, asking. But the Svar Makdoshim highlight that this is a very holy time. That is a unique opportunity that we have during the year. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam is in each and our homes during this month. Tosfos in Bracha says something striking. The halacha is that if I want to finish my meal and I tell my guests, I'm getting sick of my guests already, and I say, Avla Nivarech, let's bench. This meal's going too long. The halacha is we're not allowed to continue eating. We have to make a bracha if we want to continue eating. Because somebody called for benching. There was already a removal of the das, a person who already was thinking about moving on, finishing the meal. Do you want to start anew? That's now, you now have to make a new bracha. Tosfos there, Brachos asks, what happens if a person says, Rabbi Osai Nevarech, and then he realizes he didn't have the afikomen that night? Tosfos says, you don't have to make a new bracha. Tosfos says, continue on in your meal. You can have the afikomen. Because the Gemara tells us that if you're a guest in someone's home, then you are not the person who can decide when the meal ends. Only the Baal HaBos has the ability to decide when the meal is over, and he can say, Avla Nevarech, it's time to bench, it's time to go. Says Tosfos, when it comes to Leil HaSeder, you are a guest. You are not the Baal HaBos. You follow, I'm quoting the language of Tosfos, you follow the Itcha D'Rachman. You follow the Rebbeinu Shel Olam who's sitting there listening to you and listening to all the different things you're saying in Magid. So it's the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's decision. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said that the meal is not over until you have the afikomen. So says Tosfos, even if you said the words of Osai Nevarech, you could still continue on the meal. This meal and this moment of the Haggadah highlights what the Gemara tells us, that we are banim l'amam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu views us as his children. The Gemara tells us that there's a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that if you do the right thing and you act appropriately, then you're banim l'amam. If not, then you're avodim l'amam. Rabbi Meir says no. Bein Am Yisrael Osim Ritzon Shel Makom, Bein Einam Osim Ritzon Shel Makom. No matter how Am Yisrael acts throughout the year, we're always HaKadosh Baruch Hu's child. So we remind ourselves, no matter what the situation is, when we start the Haggadah, when we start Magid, we have a lot of questions. And some of us, and I'm probably all of us, have many more questions than just four questions. So the Rambam says, Vikan HaBen Shoel. And the son turns to his father. And the son turns to the Baal HaBos. The son turns to the Baal HaBayis of Leil HaSeder. And he asks his questions. Ve'omer HaKov. This is not just for a person who happens to have a son in the house. This is not just for a person who has a little child sitting there. Each and every one of us, no matter what we've accomplished this year or what we haven't accomplished this year, we are banim l'amakom, like Rabbi Meir tells us. So we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to our Alma, and we ask the question in Manishtan. But in that Manishtan, we don't only ask the questions, we're mispalim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I want to tell you something that I saw in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and with this outpost. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh writes in Parshas Bo. We know that Chazal tell us, like I just said, Manishtana is not only recited if there's a child there. Manishtana is also recited if there's just an adult there. Even if we're only out, if we're on our own in this Hagolah Seder, we still recite the Manishtana. So why does the Torah say V'higadata Levincha? It's not accurate. There are situations where I'm not going to speak to a child, and I'm still fulfilling the mitzvah of Manishtana, the mitzvah of Haggadah. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, V'higadata Levincha is a tefillah. V'higadata Levincha is telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to be zochet in the area of Bonim. I want to be zochet in the area of Bonim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen to my Manishtana. I want to make sure that the Bonim that I have, that are going to follow your Mahalach, that are going to follow a life of Torah and Mitzvahs. I want to make sure that I have the right Hadracha, and I can be Mechanech in the right way, my Bonim. But then the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, it even speaks to those that aren't yet zochet to have one. And when the Torah says that he got it to live in Chaleomar, referring to the Manishtana, referring to the person that looks to the Rebbeinu Shlomo, to the Baal HaBayis, and says, please answer my tefillos, what it means is V'higadata Levincha Al Inyone Bincha. I wasn't zochah yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to have children, or I wasn't zochah yet to have the amount of children that I'd like to have in my family. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please give me the skos of Banim Uvdei Banim Oskim in Torah Mitzvos.
One of the nice things about all the Rabbanim and the community of Fairlawn as a whole getting together is that we're all talking about the same thing. We're all talking about the Haggadah. But Rabbi Belazon and I thought that because our side of town is a little bit smaller, that maybe we could speak about even the exact same part of the Haggadah and not step on each other's toes. So Manishtana, and you can use this at a different part of the Seder. If you have two Sedarim at your home, then you're about to be set for two nights in a row. But if you only have one in your home and you have one elsewhere, you can use this at another part of the Seder, and you'll see by the end where you can use it. Where else you can use it. So, as Rabbi Belazon said, Manishtana is expressed in the Mishnah. It's played out in its entirety in the Mishnah. But what's really interesting about the way that the Haggadah is formulated in the Mishnah is that Manishtana is the only section of the entire Haggadah that is written out in full and is undisputed, meaning not presented by a single opinion, but is accepted by the Klal. So it's written out in full and accepted by everyone. It's the only thing in the entire Haggadah that's presented in the Mishnah as such. So what's the significance? What's so crucial about Manishtana that it needs to be written in full in the Mishnah? There are a lot of other parts of the Haggadah, and there are a lot of other parts that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Matchil Vignus U'Mesayim B'Shevach. You start off with the deprecation, you start off with the disgrace of Bnei Israel, and you conclude with praise and the glory of freedom. That's written in the Mishnah. And then, what comes next? That you should doresh, that you should explain all of the details of Arami Oved Avi. But it doesn't go into those details, it just says that you should do that. And so, to some degree, it's left up to at least the Amoraim, if not us, to decide how exactly you're going to do those things. But Manishtana, you need to have the exact text. But what I'm saying is a little bit of a red herring, because if you look at the Magid, if you look at the Manishtana that we have in our Haggadahs, it doesn't match up. with the Manishtana in the Mishnah. Because our Manishtana that we have, that we recite in the Haggadah, starts off with matzah, and then maror, and then dipping, matbilim, and then haseba, leaning. So, matzah, maror, dipping, and leaning. But if you look into the Mishnah, you see that there's actually a different order. First, still is matzah, then maror, but what comes next is, anyone know? What comes next? Tzli, right, the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach comes next, followed by dipping. So what we have today is leaning instead of Korban Pesach. And leaning comes in at the end, it's the fourth one instead of the third one, because it's tacked on afterwards. But if you look at the Mishnah, the order makes a lot of sense. Matzah, Maror, Pesach, and then dipping. But once you have this set of four as your four questions, one of them clearly sticks out like a sore thumb. And that's dipping. Because all over the place, we talk about Pesach, Matzah, Maror. All over the place, we have these symbols, these foods. But dipping is a different type of question. I have a two-year-old, so sometimes I think like a two-year-old. If a two-year-old walks up to the Seder table and looks at what's on the table, the two-year-old level question is, what's that, what's that, what's that? And if you look at the first three questions in the Mishnah, that's basically what they are. They're two-year-old level questions. What is that? Usually we eat bread, and now we're eating matzah. What is that? Usually we eat, I don't know, broccoli, and now we're eating romaine lettuce. Usually we eat stew, and now we're eating Korban Pesach. So, what's that? Is basically the first three questions. But the fourth question is unique, not just in terms of what it's talking about, but also in terms of how complex of a question it is. Because the fourth question, at least in the Mishnah, dipping, is not a two-year-old question. You have to be paying attention to what's going on in the Seder, not just the snapshot. Sorry, that's not the right word for today's day and age. The Snapchat of what's the Instagram of what's going on at the Seder. You can't Instagram dipping. Just looks like you're holding something. You have to be engaged in the process. You have to be looking at what's going on. But really, the question is much more complex than that. It's much more pervasive to the Jewish experience than just Pesach, Matzah, and Maror on one side and dipping on the other. Because if you look at the Jewish calendar and you work your way all the way around, starting moving backwards through Purim, Tu B'Shvat, Chanukah, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Shavuos, even Tisha B'Av, all of the holidays have foods. Jewish holidays have unique foods, whether it's Hamantashen or Latkes or apples and honey. Jewish holidays have unique foods. And so, if your child walks up to the Seder table and says, what is this, what is this, what is this, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, there's a one-word answer that you can respond to them. You can just say, well, it's Yom Tov. It's Jewish holidays. This is what we do. All the holidays. You didn't ask this about our Hamantashen on Purim. You didn't ask this about the apples on Rosh Hashanah. It's the same answer. And we never say Manishtana Halayla Hazeh Mikol Halelos, that we're taking an apple or eating a round challah. We don't ask that question. At least not in a formal way. So what's the key to understanding why we have special foods that are somehow different than all of the other special foods? The answer is question number four. Dipping. Because unlike Purim, where we eat Hamantashen, and you can suggest all sorts of reasons for why we eat Hamantashen, what it might be compared to, what it might look like, but ultimately Hamantashen has very little to do with the essence of the holiday itself. But you can't say that about Pesach. Because Pesach, well, the name of the holiday itself is food. It's Pesach. Korban Pesach. They're synonymous. Okay, so you'll tell me, no, that doesn't make sense. The holiday is named after the Korban. Ah, but what's the other name for Pesach in the Torah? Besides for Chag HaAviv, what's the other name? Chag HaMatzos. You can't get away from food on Pesach. The essence of the experience of Pesach is the foods that we eat on Pesach. And how do I know that? How do we know that? We know that because of the fourth question. Matbili. Dip it. Because we're not just asking about the food. We're asking why we're engaging with the food in this way. You don't just have the food on the table. You're supposed to do specific things with it. Because there's a different goal with Pesach food than other food. The goal with Pesach food is to experience something that people used to experience when they were eating this very same food, when they were touching this very same food. When you hold the matzah, it's meant to remind you of the matzah that people held, that our people held 3,000 years ago when they were leaving Egypt. When you taste the juiciness of roasted Pesach, it's supposed to make you think, I recognize this taste. There's a deja vu here. I can use this as a platform, as a mechanism to experience the actual Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's so sensory. It's so experiential. I can eat the food and it's as if I'm eating the food back then. And so we ask a question of Matbilim to remind us that this is not like Purim. This is not like Hanukkah. This is not like Shavuos. We're not just eating foods and it has a connection to the holiday. The holiday is the food. Because the food expresses the ultimate goal of the Pesach Seder, which is to be transported, to go back, to use the food as a mechanism, to go back and try to close your eyes as you're eating the maror and taste bitterness and feel some aspect of bitterness in life and imagine what it might have been like to experience an even greater bitterness. And that's why the conclusion of this piece, of this Haggadah, is Rabban Gamliel, which is the next mission. Because what does Rabban Gamliel say? You can't fulfill the Haggadah unless you mention the food. Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Because the food is the only surefire way. It's the way that everyone across the board can experience the night of the Seder and going back to experience it as if we were leaving Egypt.
To Rabbi Markowitz and all the organizers, to Avi. So the Haggadah has four sons asking four questions. And of course, it all comes from Sukkim in the Torah. But the Haggadah tells us, Chacham Mahu Oimer. What does the Chacham ask? What does he say? Maha Edes Vachukim Vahamishpatim Asherziva Hashem Lekeinu Eschem. What are all these mitzvahs? What are the edus, the chukim, the mishpatim? It goes through the three different categories of the mitzvahs that God has commanded us to do. Eschem. And then the answer that's given to the chacham, va'af ado emer loy, and also you should answer him, ki hilcheis ha-pesach, the laws of Pesach, ein maftirin achra pesach afikoymon, that after one has had the afikoymon, has had the korban Pesach, there is no eating afterwards. This is the very final thing that we're supposed to eat. Question has always bothered me, and the answer has always bothered me. First of all, when we talk about a chacham, and he's a kind of child that the Torah calls as a chacham. Haggadah shel Beis Chazal telling us this is a chacham. This is a chacham speaking. So if this is a chacham speaking, we must assume that there's something more than meets the eye to his question. What is he asking? He's asking, what are these mitzvahs? He's asking, what? The Chacham doesn't know that God took us out of Egypt and he gave us mitzvahs, the Matan Torah, he gave us mitzvahs. And what's the answer? The answer? Tell him about Hilchos Pesach. Tell him after the Afikoyim we don't need anything. No, that's an answer to the Chacham's question. So there must be something much deeper to the Chacham's question than meets the eye. And so what the Chacham is asking, and I'm sure there's a ton of different biurim explanations and the mefarshim and the rishonim. Of course, everybody deals with this question. The chacham davens every day, And in Vayivorach David, he says, L'cho Hashem hagduo v'hagvuro v'atiferes v'hanetzach v'yahoin. God, we speak to Hashem and we say, you have all these various attributes. Chedula, gvura, tiferes, which of course Kabbalistically refer to the 10 spheres, the 10 divine attributes. And then in the Hamshech, in the continuation of Yivarach David, in some Nuskois, at least in our Nusach, this is what it says, Umuroyma malkol brachu asila. Even though now we've identified 10 different attributes by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He's kind, etc., all the different attributes of Hashem. Nonetheless, Umuroyma malkol brachu asila, God is beyond any definition, any attribute, any faculty. He's beyond all of that. We cannot define HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any way. He transcends all of it. Says the Ben HaChacham, God transcends everything. You mean to tell me He cares about my mitzvahs? What are these all about? It doesn't bother Him. Needs our mitzvahs. What the Ben HaChacham needs to hear is something that the Haggadah makes a point of saying at different points, at different stages of the Haggadah. And it's also expressed in the answer. In other words, the answer to the Chacham. The answer to the Ben HaChacham is that you have to recognize how deeply the mitzvahs are important to Hashem. How really important those mitzvahs are to Hashem. In what way? So please indulge me for a moment. I'm going to explain a concept with regard to Bechira Chofshis, with regard to free choice, what we call a free choice. We speak about free choice. Let's say we have two different houses we're going to choose from. Two different houses. I like this house and I like that house. But one house has some virtue over the other house. Now to say that I'm really choosing here would be a mistake. Why? Because the details, the value, the various amenities that the other house offers are really compelling me to choose that house. So I'm not exercising really free choice here. I'm simply going with my logic and determining which one is going to yield the greatest benefit to me. In other words, there's something that particular entity has that makes it more valuable to me, for which reason I'm going to go with that. That's not real free choice. Free choice means that everything is absolutely the same. When everything is absolutely the same, then I can exercise real free choice. However, in the human realm, we don't really have that level of free choice. The one who has that type of free choice, where everything is absolutely equal, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Real Bechira Chofshis is by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, where everything is equal. We speak of Torah, we say in the bracha before Haftorah, HaBoicher B'Torah, Hashem chooses Torah. Hashem chooses the mitzvahs. Hashem chooses Yisrael Amar. Hashem chose us. Which means that as far as Hashem is concerned, everything is equal. But nonetheless, He chose this. He decided. We don't know why. He decided He's going to choose this. What does that tell you? Even though the Gabi HaKadosh Baruch, even as far as God is concerned, everything seems to be equal. Nonetheless, Hashem decided, with absolute free choice, this is what I want. I want Matzah, I want a Korban Pesach, I want Mora, this is what I want. It's absolute and it's eternal. And it's not compelled by anything. There isn't anything that compels Hashem. Oh, you know, this mitzvah, it brings value to humanity. Choose it. That one's good. That's not the idea. Because Hashem chose it, that's the reason why it has value. And so that's the response that's given to the Ben HaChacham. How did Hashem take us out of Mitzrayim? The Haggadah tells us. Ani v'loy malach, ani v'loy sorof, ani v'loy hashliach, ani hu v'loy acher. Me, myself, and I, that's it. I was the one who took you out. No madrega, there's no level, there's none of that. There's no attributes, none of those. It's not about that. It's about me, myself, my own free choice. I've done it. I chose you. I want to give you the mitzvahs, and that's it. And that's the answer to the Ben HaChacham when we tell him, What's the reason why we don't need anything after that? One of the reasons that are brought down in the Rishonim is to impress upon the person that you're eating the afikoyim for what reason? The shei mitzvah. For the purpose of a mitzvah. It's not for the purpose of benefit to the guf, to the body. The person isn't deriving any benefit from it. I ate already. I don't want to eat anymore. Finished. We're done. No. Mitzvah. Why? I want it. I chose it. That's what I want. And so that tells us a little bit about how truly valuable and precious and cherished the mitzvahs are to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so knowing how important the mitzvahs are to our Hashem, certainly when it comes to Pesach, we're going to make every effort to first of all mimikai and fulfill those mitzvahs by ourselves. And knowing how important it is that a yid fulfill a mitzvah, we're going to make sure that all the yidin in our surroundings are going to have the merit of also doing those mitzvahs. So if there's a yid down the block that might not have the opportunity to participate in the Seder, to have matzah, or whatever it might be that's associated with Pesach, we'll go, we'll call them up, we'll knock on their door, and we'll invite them over. Here's an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah and connect to a HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So you know that Leil Seder, there's a tremendous focus on chinuch, the mitzvah of chinuch. But if we're honest with ourselves, despite all the preparation that the kids are doing now in their local day schools, from daycare learning the stories, to first or second grade filling in their haggadahs, maybe in middle school and yeshiva getting their vortlach ready for Pesach, if we actually reflect, what are our greatest memories of our childhood siddur? What are our memories? So I'll speak for myself, I'll be honest. There was no vort that I can remember when I was 7. But my memory is the games I would play, hiding the afikomen, snatching the afikomen that my father hid, and then rehiding it. Having my father fall asleep and then begging us, knowing the kids know exactly when they have the leverage to get the greatest gift out of their parents because they desperately want to go to sleep. So they're willing to give you anything. And the leverage and the handling of the negotiations that take place over the afikomen to get the biggest prize, the biggest present. In the end of the day, I would imagine that many of us in the room can relate to such a memory. And the question is, how could such a Kadosh night, a night with a centrality of focus on the mitzvah of chinuch, of educating our children, be spent with a game, a glorified game of hide and seek? How could it be that the Seder memories of our childhood are all about hiding and finding and negotiating with the afikomen for a big prize? So where does this custom come from? There's a Gemara in Pesachim Kuf Tes, which talks about the famous practice of Rabbi Kiva to give the children walnuts, different types of nuts, and grains, and Erev Pesach to keep them awake. And then there's another practice recorded, Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, "Chotvin matzos belele psachim bishvil tinokos shelo yishan." Chotvin matzos belele Pesach. You would think this is our source. They were snatching matzos so the kids shouldn't fall asleep. But that's not how the Rishonim interpret this Gemara. One day in Rashi is that you lift up the reason why we lift up the Seder plates, or lift up where the matzahs are, is from this Gemara. Another day of Ratan, Rashi, Rashbam, is you should try to have your Seder move along. It shouldn't drag on. Both Rashi and Rashbam said the Seder should move, because the focus is the children. So it's true that maybe the actual Gemara, not interpreted by Rashi and Rashbam, could be a source, but it seems We don't know the actual source. If anyone has any historical evidence to when this minhag developed, I'd be interested to hear after this this event. But in Sefer Shemin HaTov, Rabbi Bernard Weinberger offers a beautiful insight, if not to the origin of the minhag, but at least the significance of what this whole game of hide and seek is all about. Rabbi Weinberger explains that Chazal view the Iker Matzah truly to be the Matzah of Tzafu. It's the Iker Matzah, Mitzvah's Matzah. And it's true that the Matzah we eat, the Afikomen, is a Zecher L'Korban Pesach. Rabbi Weinberger said it's also true that the reason why the portion of the Seder is called Tzafun is that the Afikomen also is Merames, it alludes to the Geula Hasida level. It alludes, it's Merames, to the future redemption. At the end of the Seder, we're not just focused on the past, we're forward thinking. And so Tzafun by Tzafun, we're already thinking about the future, we're thinking about the future Geula. So Rabbi Weinberger wants the Melamed Tzchus and this Minhag Klal Yisrael, again, when it started, I don't know. That the message that we're trying to convey to the children, and it's a message that Rabbi Weinberger points out, it's not the Amar Til Bincha, it's the Gara Til Bincha. It's a message that's not just in Amira, it's in the actions and in the memories that we create at our Seder for our children and our grandchildren. And the message that they hold the key to ending the Seder. They hold the wild card of when Tzafun, when the Afikom will be eaten, is that the key to the future is in the hands of the children. The whole game of hide and seek is that the parents say, we are not going to continue the Seder until the children are ready. We put the matzah literally in the children's hands. And say, it's up to you to take us to that ultimate geula. We're passing on the torch from the parents and the grandparents, the bubbies and the zaydis, to the 8 o'clock, and saying, the afikomen's in your hands. We've given you the chinuch. We've paid for the education. Now we're passing on the baton. And so for the end of the day, maybe just a little bit of ashkafa for the parents and grandparents. If you're really tired and you end up losing your negotiations really badly with your children, get grandchildren, and they really milk you for a really nice gift, and you're feeling bad, you're feeling, what happened to all my education dollars I pay for the good varlach and the nice songs? Don't feel bad. This is the kiyum of what the Seder is all about.
So this afternoon, I had a big schuss. I went with Sarah's grandfather, goes every single year to the Shatzer Matzah Factory, and he has a slot every single year for an hour to bake matzah. So I brought my three daughters, the three big ones, with cousins, and we all went. And happens to be, it's a longer story, you can catch me afterwards, we're related to the person that runs the factory, so he gets a slot every year. So he should live to Nev Esrim, and we should do this for many, many years. So as I was there, and you have to think, I asked my cousin who runs a factory, how many pounds of matzah do you produce a day? And you have to know, Shatzer matzah is basically divvied out, you know, and shipped to, I don't know if every single state in America, but close to it. He said they produce, depends on the day, 500 to 1,000 pounds a day of matzah. It's all handmade. They're produced on two long tables, the zen. I could not believe it. And standing there, just watching the whole scene being passed from one to another, there was no batala, there was no discussions, no people talking to each other. There was one woman who was standing in the middle of the two tables. Every 18 minutes, there's a shot clock in the back of the room, everyone could see it. Every 18 minutes, she would get up and say, L'shem Matzah Mitzvah, and every single person would then repeat after her, L'shem Matzah Mitzvah. It was really a treat to see, and just an inspiration for myself, and I hope, hopefully for my children as well. So, but when I saw this, what really thrilled me was throughout the time we were there for over an hour, only one matzah fell on the floor. And nobody bumped into each other at all. And there was no fighting. It blew my mind how it was just so much alacrity, so much zrizos between every single person was doing their exact job. And what I really thought is that this really goes back to Pesach Mitzrayim. And I think that in a way, this is Zecher L'Nes, that we read in the Haggadah that the reason why we eat the matzah is because we left Egypt so quickly. And in a way, we make the matzah in such a way, with such alacrity, with such quickness, it's really not 18 minutes, it's really closer to 5 to 6 minutes, that from start to finish, probably even less, I wasn't precisely counting. But if you take that reason, the reason that we're given, Rabbi Will Haya Omer, we all point at the matzahs, why? Because we eat the matzah because we left Mitzrayim so quickly. The truth is, if you read the Haggadah very, very carefully, it's a contradiction. We begin the Haggadah, we begin Magid with Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread. It's the next few words. Yachlu Avasana Ba'ara de Mitzrayim. This is the poor man's bread that we ate in Egypt, in Mitzrayim. I don't get it. Is it the poor man's bread that we ate in Egypt? Or is it the bread that we ate when we left Egypt? Right, it's a contradiction, no? So the Ibar Benel actually, in his commentary on the Haggadah, writes that when he was in jail, I believe in Spain, when he was in jail, he was fed matzah. Why? As we all know, matzah stays in you, right, for a very long time. So it's a good thing to give to the prisoners. And it was something, he said, therefore he thinks, and it doesn't go bad, really. You can have matzah from Hanukkah, which they do, and you sell it for Pesach. Doesn't go bad, it stays within you. And therefore, he says, that's what the Mitzrayim must have fed the Jews in Mitzrayim. So really, when you look at the matzah, there's a dialectic at the matzah of the matzah. It's not only lechem oni, poor man's bread, but it's matzah, it's freedom bread. It has this dialectic, two aspects to it. If you branch this idea out, and again, I'm going to give you a few examples, but there are many, many more. Almost everything that we do at the Seder has both of these aspects to it, freedom and slavery at the same time. For example, charoses. What is charoses? Zecher of? The mortar, the cement, the bricks that we made. That's one reason given in the Gemara. A second reason given in the Gemara is that one of the ingredients, according to one opinion in the Gemara, is apples. Why? Because of the Medrash that the Jewish children were taken out from the water by Malachim, and were placed under the apple trees, Tachat HaTapuach, referencing a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which refers to the free time, right? The Jewish people getting, not the slavery, not the bricks and mortars, but the cheres. Dalakosos. We drink dalakosos. The reason given is Arba Lashona Shel Geula, the four expressions of Geula in the beginning of Parshas Va'era. If you turn to the Yerushalmi, you'll notice that there are other reasons given, and another reason given is because of the Kos Paro mentioned in the story, the dreams of the butler back in Parshas Mikitz. Again, referring to the cup of Paro, the Shibud and the Cheiros bifurcated together, the dialectic of the Dalakosos. What type of wine should we drink at the Seder? A color wine? Red wine. There's a Taz that thinks white wine at a certain point in history. But red wine is the preferred wine, the Shulchan Aruch says. Why? It's Meshubach. It's preferable because it's the best type of wine. Zecher L'Cheiros. Others argue that the reason why we should have red wine, it's a little bit gross, but the reason given is because Paro bathed in the blood of the babies. He had tzaras, the Medrash says, and to remember that part of the slavery aspect, we do that as well. Again, not only does the Dalakosos have avdus and cheros, freedom and slavery, but the red wine itself. I'll leave you with one more. You're going to argue with me this is a stretch, but it's an Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Maror, the Gemara says, slam dunk. We don't do a seba. We don't lead for Maror because it's Echer La'avdus. It's a slavery. It's the bitter times. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh, in Perek Yud Beis, Sefer Shemos, writes, the reason why we have Maror is because when you eat maror with the Korban Pesach, if anyone who's been to Massive in Eretz Yisrael and Bet Yehuda, some people like in their shawarma a good piece, a good tzchug. They like something spicy in there. So he argues that the reason why you have the maror with the Korban Pesach is to enhance the flavor of the Korban Pesach. So you see here that even within the maror, you have this dialectic of the avdus and the cheiros together. You can, again, come to me afterwards. I think there are a few more examples. But I'll leave you with a really short vignette. One of my favorite Haggadahs out there is Rabbi Lamb's Haggadah. He should live and be well. Rabbi Lamb is actually a cousin to my father-in-law, and these just had the same siddurim together. And their grandfather would lead the siddurim, Rabbi Daumel. And he writes about Rabbi Daumel, and I think it's the same idea, and something that we all feel at the Seder too. And there's Rabbi Donat that's referencing what you remember at your Seder. And it really, everyone has other different types of memories that we all remember and reflect on as children. So he writes, the memory I most cherish was that of Zaidi, who chanted certain passages of the Haggadah and the melodies of his Hasidic home before World War I. His face beamed when he had us, his American-born grandchildren sing along with him. But when it came to the Haggadah's description of the torments of the Israelite children by the sadistic Egyptian taskmasters, Zaidi's mood changed abruptly. He was totally silent as we continued to read aloud from the Haggadah. He said nothing, but tears streamed down his face and onto his beard. I do not recall if anyone else noticed it, but I did. And he writes, it took me a few years to understand how can Zaidi in one moment of the Seder be so excited and so elated, and the next moment be crying. He writes, Zaidi's change of mood was his personal illustration of the dual mode of the historic Jewish experience as expressed, as represented in the Haggadah. Sadness and singing are both part of the Seder of life. This Haggadah, so simply yet so profound, is our emancipation proclamation. This year we are slaves, next year free men and women. Again, matzah, charoses, dalkosos, red wine, and maror have all both of these elements in it of cheiros and avdos, which really represents the nature, historical nature, and the nature of what it means to be a Jew. Conclude with Rabbi Yehuda Kalo.
Good evening, you're welcome. And I just want to say on behalf of our Pesach Knesset how honored we are to have this evening. And I'm especially happy in terms of this reflection of the unity and the camaraderie that exists between our body. And I'm especially proud to host this, and we should have this further by Shavuos and by Sukkos. We should continue these beautiful get-togethers for Torah. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the very warm focus on the end of the Seder. But just let's take one step back and ask ourselves, Man Shano, Alayla Zeh, how different is this night? In the sense that it's really divided into three parts. Your beginning of the Seder until the meal. The meal interrupts the recitation. And then comes a recitation after the meal. Now, we know what the Shulchan Aruch says every morning. I wake up, the first thing I want is breakfast. Breakfast? Not so fast. First you have to daven. Okay, we daven, and then you eat. Every Shabbos morning, we daven, and then we eat. So what are we going to do on the basis of Seder? We're going to, it's a different form of, quote, davening, but we're going to use the Haggadah as a form of communicating and saying thank you to Hashem for taking us out of Egypt. But then, what is it? We're hungry? Okay, so then we interrupt. We have our meal, and then we... Oh, wait a second. I forgot to finish. What's going on? So we didn't want to say, well, they didn't want to give us such a taxing recitation all before the meal. You'll note in your Pesach Seder that the Hallel, which is what I want to talk about primarily, is split. Hallel happens to be five paragraphs from the book of of Psalms, 113, 114, he said before the meal, and Psalm 115, 16, 17, 18, 6 paragraphs. The other four are said after the meal. Why are you doing this? So the first thing I think you should be aware of, just as the children announce before the Seder, and they go through and they announce the 15 stages, the coming events of the evening, Kadesh through Nirtzah, you should understand as adults and communicate this, that our evening at the Pesach Seder is divided into three parts. Prior to the meal, and post the meal. And it's very conveniently dissected into, and what is God's name? The name of Hashem is past, Hayah, Hoveh, and Yiyah. Past, present, future. The first part of our Seder until the meal is past. Thank you, Hashem, for what you've done for us in the past. And we know what that means. Tonight you took us out, not just our ancestors, but we focus on the ancestors. You took us out of Egypt. If you wouldn't have taken us out, as we said in the first paragraph of Avinu, we would still be. You take a look at the very Yosef, put delicious shot on that. But listen carefully. The first part of your evening is past. Your meal is present. The fact that He sustains us and we're able to eat Bli Ayin Hara, a beautiful Yom Tov meal. Whatever your custom is, you're a Sephardi and you're eating roast. You're an Ashkenazi and you're not eating roast. All for the same reason. We're remembering the Korban Pesach. But the bottom line is that our meal is, listen carefully now, an extension. I'm going to show you in a moment what's an extension of. It's an extension of the challah. Let's see what I mean in a moment. And after the meal, the halel, which is next to the last of the steps of the Seder, halel, then comes Nirtzah, the last four paragraphs of the halel have nothing to do with the Exodus. It's all future-oriented. On this night, we split the night. First half saying thank you for the past, and the last half focusing on, please God, what is going to be in the future. That's number one. Number two, I'd like to suggest that the meal itself is a celebration of. Listen carefully now. The Talmud tells us there are four circumstances for which a person recites what is known as Birkas HaGomel. A person who is in a difficult situation. God forbid he was sick. And thank God, he has been healed. That's number one. From the acrostic Chayim. The Chol HaChayim, Yiduch HaSela. The second one is Yisumin. Generally understood to mean a person who was incarcerated. A person who was in jail. The third one is one who crossed over a Yam, a difficult, a body of water, which was especially more challenging to traverse in yesteryear, pirates, the quality of the boats. And finally, the Mem is the Midbar, going into a desert. We as a people experienced all four. There was sickness in Egypt, and there was, we were, no one was able to leave Egypt. Any slave who tried to run away couldn't do it. So we were incarcerated in Egypt. And we were saved by the sea. We were provided by His greatness and kindness in the desert. So each of these four factors in of itself requires a meal of thanksgiving. It's one of those we had it first. The Thanksgiving meal of the Jewish people is not the last Thursday in November. Not to take away from the fact that as Americans, we are very appreciative. That's part of the last part of the Seder as well. When we recognize how much Shvoch HaMascha, what does that mean? We say the verses from Psalms, and we say, God, give it to them. They who have persecuted your people. The only reason why they hate Jews is because we are his, capital H, ambassadors. So in essence, when they take out their anger and hatred on the Jewish people, they're taking their hatred and anger out on God. We are, thank God, our identity is completely and totally infused with him. This is so atypical. Look at the English. You know what you're saying? Ah! You're saying, pour your wrath. There's no other way to translate it. There's no nice, nice. There are times when it's nice, nice. And there are times that you have to be very honest and very open. God, it's just not right. Tzadik v'ra'lo. Unbelievable. And that's what we're crying out after the meal. The meal itself, listen carefully. Right before the meal, and right before that blessing of Asher Golanu, we say two paragraphs of Hallel. So strange. So one way is clearly those two paragraphs are referring to the past, and they belong with the first third of the evening. I'm going to give you another reason, aside from celebrating the four B'chol HaChayim, the four aspects of saying thank you to God. I'm going to tell you that you have the capacity, that there's a Hallel that you articulate, a Hallel that you say. Where is it? What page? Oh, I got it. It's in the Haggadah. And there's a Hallel that you eat. When a Jew eats, his very eating can be a Hallel. I recognize God. I'm not just eating because the food is good, and I'm not just eating because I'm hungry. I'm eating because it gives me the opportunity to serve you. And let's be very honest. That could and should be our motivation, writes the Rambam in chapter 3 of Hilchos Deos all year long. All year long, I'm too distracted. On the night of the Pesach Seder, I have the ability to infuse my meal with sanctity. So that's why, try to be careful. Again, but trying to steer the conversation, even at the time of the meal, not on the president and politics, and not on sports, and which team is doing what. Believe it or not, there are some more important things to bring to your Pesach Seder than that, forgive me, triviality. It's not for the Pesach Seder. Your meal could, should be an extension of your Hallel. Find interesting questions. Think in advance. Not only to challenge the children, which we want to keep their interest, but the adults. Ask the adults at your Pesach Seder, why do we have to go down to Egypt in the first place? It's not a silly question. That question is not found in the Haggadah. I think it's a very worthwhile question. And I think if you ask it to the adults, it will evolve and create interesting conversation, stimulate during the course of the meal. That would be one example. Let's just talk about Hallel quickly in general. Today was Rosh Chodesh. We said an abridged Hallel. Manish Tana, how different is the Hallel on this night? This Hallel we say without a blessing. This Hallel we split. This Hallel we say after dark. The Mishnah says Hallel is one of those mitzvahs, which is a day mitzvah. And the Ran quotes the famous teaching of Rav Haigon. But this is so important that you have to know it, you have to live it, you have to experience it. Hallel all year long. Pesach morning. Mitzvah Hashem Tuesday morning. 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from tomorrow. We're going to say Hallel and Shur with a bracha. You want to know why? That's a formal thing. We're all going to stand. We're all going to say it. Hopefully we're going to sing it in your respective shuls. That is the Torah's Kriya, a recitation. On the night of the Pesach Seder, this is it. It's not Kriya. You're not reading the Hallel. It's the Torah Shira, says Rav Haigon. And the way to understand it is one word, spontaneous. There are certain things you don't have to tell somebody. You'll forgive me. They bring the baby outside to the father, to the mother, grandparents, etc. Come on. Kiss the baby. You don't have to tell them to kiss the baby. It comes by itself. Tonight, it's not kiss the baby. It's give thank you to Hashem. My cup That's how you should feel at the Pesach Seder. Each and every one of us. Everybody has their challenges in life. But tonight, my cup, speaking on behalf of everyone here, everyone at your Seder, your cup runneth over. Tonight, the challah, the thanksgiving, the praise is a spontaneous one. It's not because it says on page 64 in your Haggadah, now we say the challah. No, it's not. We're not saying the challah. We're singing the challah tonight because this expresses our complete and total involvement in this process. And I'll close with what I call the process. I was privileged to give a shiur this past Shabbos. It took an hour and 15 minutes to talk about how you would have Sheva Brachos at a Pesach Seder. I can't go into the issues now. I wasn't given an hour and 15 minutes tonight. But I'm telling you one thing. The concept that I tried to develop is as follows. Of course, what is tonight? Tonight is the night, two biblical mitzvos and many rabbinic mitzvos. Two biblical mitzvos of eating matzah and telling a story. But it's more, take a step back and look at it as the night of our engagement. Go back. How happy you were when you found your prospective spouse. Shavuos is the time of the marriage. That's it. So many of the practices that we do under the chuppah come from Shavuos. Tachas Tahor, all the many, many. But the night of the Pesach Seder is the celebration of the engagement. And if you look at it that way, it once again helps create a different perspective. It's not simply, yeah, the calendar says this is what I have to do tonight, that's why I'm doing it. No, I'm doing it because I'm excited. I'm doing it because I'm elated. I'm doing it because I'm able to express this very special relationship. I'll close with Ish v'Isha. That's what it is. The analogy between a man and a woman is the analogy of Shir HaShirim, of God and the Jewish people. And that's the Yud and the Hey of Ish and Isha, which is 15. There are 15 Dayenus. As you say Dayenu, so what's Dayenu? This would have been enough. If my lover, my spouse, would only have had this, it would have been enough. But look, they have. Meaning, look what God has done for me. And it's a challenge. But 15 of the Dayenus, I think, is once again to remind us of that very special relationship that we had, have, and please God, will have with Him till the end of the days. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I want to thank Shani Torres hosting this week, this year's Haggadah Marathon. Here's a Shem, we will be able to make the rotation around all the shuls, and then again. Just a couple announcements from Shem Torah's side. There's going to be Rav Schechter, Rav Hershel Schechter from YU, will be speaking here in Shem Torah on Thursday night at 8 p.m., followed by a Q&A related to Pesach. Right after I finish this part of the program, we're going to have Mara from the shul. I just wanted to share one idea, which I think sums up the night. I say this word over every year when I say the Pesach Seder wherever I am, Chicago or Queens. Mitzvah Hashem, farewell soon. And Yerushalayim Yerkovich. I heard this from Noah Holbaum in Queens, beautiful board, and I really like to share it with anyone that I can. So going back to our new board report about the three matzahs. We have the three matzahs that we have on Pesach at the Seder. The Zohar writes that matzah is matzah de Hedusa, the matzah of Emuna, represents Emuna. So Noah Holbaum spoke about how there are three types of Emuna that a person can have. A person has an emunah al avar, the past. A person has an emunah on the present, and there's also an emunah on the future. Two of those emunahs are very easy, and one of them is a little bit more difficult. The easier ones are obviously the ones where you say, ah, what was good, Baruch Hashem, Hashem meant well, all is well. It's also easy to go into the future and say, Mirtz Hashem, everything will be great. Everything will be awesome. But then, at a particular point in time, to say it will be good, tadimuna, that things will go well right now, a lot of times people don't have that emuna. It's hard. It's hard to grasp that emuna and to be able to say everything will be fine right now. So Rambam said, go to a Seder Pesach Seder that represents three matzahs. The top matzah represents that past emuna, that everything is going to be okay. That's a sholim matzah. The bottom matzah, which represents the matzah for the future, everyone's easy to say, everything will be good. But the matzah that's hard, the middle matzah, is the hope that we break that part. And what do? We break it, we put it away, and we go through the whole Seder. We go through all the things that we spoke about tonight, and all the things that we do through a Seder, from the beginning till the end, and at the end of the Seder, after we do all that, we solidify our emunah of the hope, of the present, and we take that matzah, we bring it back together, we forge it, and we say, now we have perfect emunah, the matzah, the nusa, the past, the present, the future. Everyone should have a chag kosher, sameach, and thank you for coming tonight.